Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Panning the Stream. My name is Dan Reichert. Sitting across from me is my wife, Bianca Reichert. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. We just finished watching three episodes of Terrace House, Boys and Girls in the City on Netflix. Now, this is probably the most recommended show I have seen since we started doing this. Via email and Twitter and everything, people have called this out, especially I think it happened a lot more after we did our Real World episode recently.
Yeah.
Because I think we both really enjoyed watching Real World and talking about it. And so this was kind of pitched to me as like, okay, it's like a more contemporary Japanese Real World with like, you know, some nice looks into Japanese culture and stuff. Yeah, we're done with it now. And I think we both liked it a lot.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I feel like with Real World season one, that was, we kind of approached that as like a time capsule. I mean, there were kids living in New York City. Obviously, we know what living in New York City is like. But with Terrace House, it isn't so much a time capsule as it is like a, you know, insight into how young people of this totally different culture behave. And it was really interesting to see, you know, the contrast there and how polite everyone was and how kind of mundane the whole show was.
Well, right. The Real World, they stopped being polite.
And they started getting real.
Right. Yeah. Here, they just kind of stay polite.
They just stay polite the whole way through.
Yes. Yeah. It's so different because I feel like when we watched The Real World, I think it was like, okay, this is an interesting window into kind of like the dawn of contemporary reality television and all of the kind of standbys and the way these shows are made. Like I was watching The Real World almost from like a production standpoint more than like what I felt was like a real honest look into these people's lives. Like, yes, you get these little surface level things like this guy's in a band, this girl's got a rap album coming out, you know, but I feel it was more like, okay, I can see the DNA of the reality show in this thing from 1992 or three.
Right. Yeah. And I feel like if you're comparing Terrace House to a contemporary episode season of The Real World, they're very different because, well, I've the last season of The Real World I've seen was in like the early 2000s, but even then it would take people from all around the country and bring them to this city where, you know, there was, everything was different. They left behind their friends, their family, their relationships, and, you know, they just had to adapt and get new jobs and stuff like that. Whereas like the first season of The Real World, I feel like all but that one girl from Alabama. Yeah,
yeah.
She came to New York City, but everyone else lived there. So I feel like you could compare the first season of The Real World to Terrace House better than you could like a current season of The Real World. Because in Terrace House, while these kids live together, they're still going to their jobs that they had before. They're still going to school. They still get to hang out with their friends.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like they're tearing them out of their lives and throwing them into this house with a bunch of strangers they don't know for a few months. Well, that's true. I mean, they still get to go on with their lives. It's just their living situation is different. So it's a lot less extreme. And you could tell it's not setting them up for there to be drama. But I will say what was kind of immediately apparent to me based on the reaction from that like panel that would intermittently interrupt the show was, I wonder if the producers like made a conscious effort to choose three boys and three girls that they thought would potentially be in a relationship with one another, like kind of matched each other, because they were talking about, like the panel was talking about like, oh, okay, who do you think's going to get, you know, put together? Does this person like this person? And it was like the focus on the potential like relationship stuff was really interesting to me because I feel like, you know, in the real world, obviously that stuff happens, but it's more about the drama between, not contestants, I guess the participants. Whereas this was just like, they were just like, all right, I want to set them up. And I guess it speaks to, you know, the culture in Japan that like, all right, as soon as these boys and girls are in a house together, we know something has to happen or we hope something's going to happen. I know that it's pretty common knowledge that people repress their feelings a little more in Japan. So maybe it's like, well, these kids are finally together. Something's going to happen. But it was interesting. It was interesting to see like how much weight how much focus they put on that aspect of it.
Yeah, like I think there definitely is that like the amount. So for those who didn't watch it, the panel she's referring to, there are like these six people that I assume are like celebrities of some sort, and also some small child that barely talks.
Yeah, why is he there?
I don't know.
And everything he says, everyone's like kawaii. Like,
yeah.
Everyone's like, oh my god, you're so cute. Like, why is he even there?
It was really weird. But yeah, we cut back to them several times in episode, and they are just kind of like analyzing, like Bianca said, like, oh, okay, I think there's sparks here. Oh, mm-hmm. what do you think? I think she was mad about this thing. And they make jokes and things mm-hmm. like that. I'm sure a few of them are comedians. And like, it seems like that's a bigger thing in Japan is I've seen so many like picture in picture, like judges or someone watching and reacting to something.
Yeah. Well, it's helpful for me, at least. I thought it was helpful. It could have been annoying sometimes, but it provided kind of like a stand-in for the audience.
Yes.
And it gave me context for like the behavior. So like, you know, I'm an American person watching this, and I, you know, for instance, I thought what they're acting really polite, you know, I thought some things would happen and it would just be like, oh, okay, so that happened. But then when they cut to the panel and you see everyone freaking out about it, you realize like, oh, this person did this. And I guess in Japanese culture, like this would be a big
right.
deal. So it really gave us context for that too. So I did feel it was annoying sometimes, but I was also grateful for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it also helped clarify and get me thinking about certain things. And I don't know, are they like watching live along? I'm not sure. I didn't really know.
I'm sure they're watching the edited cut. Mm-hmm. Here's my just assumption mm-hmm. is that they are given the edited cut that we wind up seeing more mm-hmm. or less, and they are reacting to what we have seen.
Right.
That's what it felt like to me.
Yeah.
And while like you said, there is a big focus on like who's gonna like not necessarily hook up, but like, you know, it seems more like romance mm-hmm. than like, oh, who's gonna, you know, fuck on this mm-hmm. show or whatever, like mm-hmm. a lot of American shows do. And like I think there obviously is that appeal of like, okay, I wonder who's gonna get together here or who's gonna like each other, whatever. But compared to American reality shows, even though both from a production standpoint, both shows would probably want that to happen mm-hmm. just for interesting television purposes. It feels much more passive in a way that I appreciated in Terrace House, whereas like, you know, we watched Rock of Love.
Right.
And that is, you could not be more the polar opposite of the spectrum of forced, like, we're going to shove you all in this house mm-hmm. with much more of the feeling of just like, you're not leaving this house. You come do our little challenges when we tell you
right.
to. We're going to get you all drunk now and hopefully some of you fight, you know. It whereas like Panning House, Terrace House, it just feels like they set up cameras. And,
yeah.
and like honestly, it did not seem like there were handheld cameras or even cameramen in the house. Like a lot of the angles we see, like here's the angle for the kitchen table. Here's the angle for the bedroom. Here's the angle for the living room thing with the couches. Like there's not a lot of camera movement. So it wouldn't surprise me if they just set these up and just let things happen without forcing it like a lot of American reality shows do.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it seemed like as far as the kids are concerned, the participants, it seemed like they went to the house because they wanted to make friends and not because they wanted to be, you know, drama queens or have all the attention on them or whatever. Like they really seemed like real people.
Yes. Whereas you can tell with like, again, most American reality shows is that everyone feels like they are bouncing around. Like there are people that have been bouncing around to every reality show audition they can because they want to be on TV.
And when they get on the show, they figure out what their role is going to be and they
yep.
kind of stick to that. But
or the producers decide like, oh, you're the heel of the season. We're
right.
going to, you know, use the worst clips of you.
Yeah. But one thing that really stood out to me, and I mentioned this before, is just how like polite everyone is and how nothing really huge happens in the show, but because of that, you can kind of tell the slightest change in behavior, and like it has way more impact than if it wasn't a show where it was like nonstop manufactured drama. For instance, when Minori and Makoto went on that run,
yeah.
and like, you know, it's just, they just went on a run. And if
yeah.
we read that on a piece of paper, it'd be like, oh, just two people going for some exercise. But like the way they were acting afterwards, the way everyone was asking about like, hey, how did the run go? Like they independently asked the Minori, they asked her alone, and then they asked Makoto. Like they were like, how did it go? Like they were acting like it was this huge thing. And it makes you realize like, oh, this probably was a big deal for them.
It
know
feels
what I mean?
Genuine, and it feels like they're having honest conversations with each other about it rather than like, I'm going to go into the confessional booth and be like, I can't believe Tara fucked or hooked up with Bruce or whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
I know, but like aside from comparing it to American shows, I'm just talking in a vacuum. Like, you could really tell the impact. It just carried a lot more weight because there wasn't so much nonsense going on. These small shifts in behavior. I guess this is the way Japanese people probably act. It's things are a little more subtle. You know, they're not going to just wear their heart on their sleeve. And looking back now on the first episode when they were sitting at the kitchen table and Uchi was like asking everyone what their type is, like that. Having watched the three episodes now, I realize like how ballsy a move that was because, you know, that's so, you know, the antithesis of the behavior that everyone, like no one's being that direct. Everyone's being kind of beating around the bush about things.
Yeah. When they first moved in, it was all almost just kind of very businesslike and just kind of polite, like, oh, hello, you know, what do you do in school? Mm-hmm. My name is this. I play baseball. And okay. Like it was not a whole lot of, you know, heart on your sleeve type stuff, you know, like acting up for the cameras. It was just like people meeting each other. It's like if you went to a new job and you had like an orientation and you had to meet a bunch of new people, it's like kind of that kind of friendly, polite conversation.
Well, yeah. I mean, but I'm just saying now, like having watched the whole thing and looking back now, like you realize how like kind of shocking that comment must have been at the dinner table for them. But anyway, so do you want to just go through who the participants?
Yeah. Yeah, we can do that. The first person we meet is Makoto. And pretty much everyone here is around like 21 to 23 range.
Early 20s.
Except yeah. for Yuki, who's a bit older, and we'll get to him. So Makoto is 21. He's a baseball pitcher. And very, very polite, kind of soft-spoken, not like a super loud personality, but just seems, I don't know, seems just kind of like a happy, confident guy that's easy to talk to.
Right.
Yeah. So he's the first one. He kind of comes in, looks around the house and sits down, and then Minori shows up. Mm-hmm. And I do wonder how this works. I wonder if the producers say, like, do they stagger it? Or it's like, okay, well, this is the order we want. So Makoto, you go in at 3, and then we'll send Minori in 10 minutes later. And like, I wonder
sure
how that works.
I'm sure there's probably an element of that.
Yeah. So Minori comes in, and she is a model, and she's also in school. Pretty much almost everyone in this season is in school and university at this point, except for Yuki?
Yuki, and I think Uchi is not in school.
Oh, okay, right. So yeah, Minori is a model.
And Mizuki.
Okay, right. Minori.
So half are in school.
I guess. I thought there was a scene in like the third episode where they were like, hey, we're all students here, right? Everyone's in university?
Oh, well, Mizuki, all right, so Minori is a model. She's in school. Yuki is a tap dancer, and he's been doing that forever. He's 27, so he's the oldest in the house.
Mm-hmm.
He has a big pompadour. I just want to throw that out there.
He's got a mustache, glasses, big pompadour, kind of skinny guy,
yeah,
tap dancer.
Yeah, but it sounds like he's obnoxious looking, but he really isn't. He's obnoxious looking.
Yeah, yeah.
But like when I hear pompadour, my mind immediately goes to the hardcore hooligan in Yakuza 0, because that's what I've been
doing. Right. That would be an impressive pompadour if it actually looks like that.
So Mizuki is an office worker. She works for like a soccer company, and I guess her CEO owns a cafe, and she's also a barista there, so she's 22. Uchi is a hairstylist. He's 23. He comes in with like his ear pierced, and he's holding a sewing machine. So, I mean, I guess he likes to make clothes and make hair. He's obviously a very hands-on, tactile person. And I don't think he's in school. Yuriko is a med student. She is 23, and I like immediately fell in love with her. She is so precious.
She's very kind of like shy and very tiny soft-spoken. And very smiley. Yeah, I think it's so cool that we meet these people, but like you said earlier, like they have access to a car. They're going about their lives. Like
they still have their jobs. They still go to school. They still, like, at that one scene that we saw, and again, we only watched the first 3 episodes, so I'm sure there's more of this, but like Mizuki's hanging out with her other friends. Like none of the Terrace House people are there. So.
Yeah, is that on the beach?
Yeah.
Yeah, we see them on the beach. We see, you know, the tap dance class. We see the salon that Uchi works in.
Mm-hmm.
We see the office, the like sports office that Mizuki works in. Mm-hmm. So she's a barista, and she also works with this company that works with like soccer and baseball and stuff. And the office is just like, it's not even cubicles. It's like this table with a billion papers on it and like 5 people all like kind of hunched around it.
Well, I've seen Sunshine Sentosake. I know how Japanese
offices right.
are.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah, I thought it was cool. Like they don't really dwell on these things very much, but like it is just kind of cool to see kind of the greater world around this reality mm-hmm. show and these characters, like, and seeing Uchi talk with the women he works with at the salon and everything. Like mm-hmm. it's interesting to see that and know that they can just like leave, like, you know, they're going to the grocery store and stuff, where again, a lot of reality shows I've seen just feels like, hey, we flew you out to this thing in LA. Don't ever leave the house. We'll bring the food and booze in. Like,
well, I know in the real world, for instance, a few seasons in, like 3 seasons in or something, they stopped putting TVs in the houses because, like, apparently one of the participants just ended up watching TV most of the season and wasn't really making drama or anything like that. But in this house, like, there's TVs. The kids still have their phones. Like, they're not detached from the outside world at all. So it seems like you know, it's the most passive way to have a really interesting reality show. And what I was really surprised in is, if you were to write down everything that a synopsis of every episode, I would think it'd be like an incredibly boring show. But just watching it, even though it was so mundane and stuff, I was so, so into it. I definitely want to watch more with you. I know we talked about that, but that's for later. But, yeah, it was just, it's really, really interesting how so much could come of like some, like just essentially nonsense. Essentially, it's just like a slice of life kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, and it feels like they let these conversations breathe. Like these conversations about like, oh, who do you like in the house? You know, like we see the full conversation instead of just like, it's not like they just cut out the like, oh, I like Mizuki or whatever. Like, no, we see the whole thought process, the whole back and forth. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, I mean, obviously there's an amount of editing that goes into it, but it just feels like these are more natural scenes that kind of breathe out and you're getting a better view of these people rather than just the events and the drama, you know?
Right. Yeah. And you have to think too, like if you were one of these participants, there's no confessional or anything. And while it's being filmed live, you can't really talk to anyone about it because your friends in the outside world don't really know what's going on in the house.
Right.
You know? And the people in the house, you don't want to vent to them because they're in the house. You don't want to make, especially in Japan, you don't want to make any kind of drama, it seems like. So it's interesting to see how they approach things because I feel like when you do have a confessional, it really, you have this place to kind of vent and construct a narrative that, like, they can, when they edit, they can just form, you know, a narrative according to whatever you say there. So, yeah, it really is just watching these people live. It's not, there's no, you know, carrot at the end of the stick. It's just these kids, you know, at a certain point in their life, they just happen to be here. And I wonder how it is for the Japanese audience. I wonder how they feel about it because for us, it's this insight into Japanese culture, and it's such a huge contrast from what we're used to. And I wonder how, and this is something I didn't really bother to investigate, but I wonder how successful the show is in Japan.
Yeah, I'm curious about the history of the show because it seems like it was something, like the way they talk at the beginning of the season was like, oh, Netflix has saved us, we're back, or whatever. So I wonder if it was a thing that aired on a network in Japan for a while, then for whatever reason didn't, and then Netflix swooped in because they thought there'd be an audience maybe in the West for it. Mm-hmm. But I think it must be fairly popular, you know, considering the amount of people that have told me about it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's like no acknowledgement of the camera. You know, you talk about no confessionals and stuff. Like, yeah, the cameras are obviously there, and everyone in the house knows that they're on a reality show. But there's not a lot of talk about like, oh God, I can't believe, you know, people are going to see this on the show or they're not talking to the camera or anything like that. It does feel like a fly on the wall type of situation.
Yeah.
So yeah, you mentioned that there isn't a lot of drama or anything here. Like, you know, the episode synopsises wouldn't have, you know, these big beats or whatever. So I'm trying to think of what the biggest conflicts. I know we're early in the season. There are like 18 episodes in the season, right?
Well, there really weren't many conflicts yet. We'll talk about them. But I just want to talk about first, I feel like the main hook of this show is the fact that it's like a slice of Japanese culture that's so pure and not like at all, you know, it's not dramatized at all. There's it's just, this is how like a weird version of life in Japan is. So I just want to talk about real quick the house itself.
Yeah.
The house is this really cool kind of like industrial looking, really modern looking place. But I will say, while the living room and kitchen are really nice and there's a cool pool, like there's only two really small bedrooms and like they all have bunk beds, which I was really confused
with
by.
These weird bunk bed configurations where they're like jutting out from every angle. And it's like this tiny little dorm room, but like with about the personality of a dorm room before you move in. It's just like white walls and I think one of them might have had a TV in there.
I mean, the bathrooms are really nice and there's two washing machines. I assume there's two dryers. So that's pretty cool. And the pool is nice. But like it was just confusing because the downstairs is so awesome. But I guess they don't expect them to spend too much time in the bedrooms. And you know, I know very little about Japanese culture, but one of the things I do know is they have those little pod hotels. So maybe they, like Japanese people, have much, like are totally fine being in a small space when they sleep or something. Obviously, I would be fine with that too, but I'm just talking about how different the bedrooms are compared to the rest of the house.
Yeah, that's like super stylish, like really nice to look at stuff, and then it's just like, here's your bunk beds.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know, I kind of get that. Like, you know, you have people here in America that feels that way too, where it's, I hear a lot of people say, never have a TV in your bedroom. You know, your bedroom should just be for like sleeping, basically.
Well, I agree with that, but I'm just saying it's, you know, at odds with the rest of the house when they have these children's bunk beds and then the rest of the house is this like luxurious, like industrial looking loft.
I also like how we're both just agreeing about like the bedroom being just for sleeping as we sit in our bedroom with our like makeshift podcast studio.
Oh, right, hey, here. Listen.
Yes. So, and again, like the show feels like to us, I think watching it, we both felt like, oh, this feels very genuine. This feels very real. But then again, we don't live in Japan. We didn't grow up in that culture. So like, I'd be curious what like the Japanese audience feels about that. Mm-hmm. Like if the Japanese audience says like, this feels very real or like, oh, no one acts like that at home. Like that's not how these
I'd
people
would. Yeah, I'd
be curious
about that. If anyone listening is, you know, Japanese, or has some deep insights into the culture there, I'd be curious if they want to email us. But the other thing I wanted to talk about was the food. Like these early 20-somethings are amazing cooks. Everything they make looks so delicious. Like, they made that fish in the foil thing. They made this, like, these bowls of rice and meat and stuff like that. They made those, like, crazy-looking omelets of the last episode
that we watched. Like, kind of, like, lasagna-looking thing with, like, all the crisscross, like, sauce on the top. Yeah,
it looked like some kind of big omelet. I don't know. It looked amazing.
It's probably really good.
But they're just like, oh, yeah. They're like, they just threw the shit together. And they also just eat a bowl of cornflakes, which I appreciate.
Yes. it makes me want to, like, I've gone to Japan a couple times for work. You know, you have not been, but we definitely want to go. Mm. And watching this, it's like, man, Japan is really, really awesome. This is set in Tokyo, mm-hmm. and then that's the only place in Japan I've been. But, like, yeah, the food and everything, the culture, it's just, it's amazing, and I really love it. I'd love to go there sometime with you.
Absolutely.
That was my thought when I went there for the first time, was, like, I'm so weird about food, but I'm going, like, I'd never gone to such an, like, exotic, you know, out-of-the-country vacation in my life, and I was like, I'm just going to try everything. Mm-hmm. And I tried all sorts of weird things that looked like full fish and jello and all sorts of weird stuff. I was there with Tim, and, like, he was a great – my friend Tim Turi, who's been there before, and he was a great guide as to, like, okay, here's a legit ramen place. Here's this thing. And, like, it's so, so different than what we eat here. I remember by, like, the third day, I think my body was, like, completely craving cheese.
Sure.
And so I had to go to the McDonald's in Japan and just, like, I just need something that feels like, you know, cheese.
Is McDonald's in Japan vastly different from McDonald's here, like, taste-wise?
Taste-wise, it's very similar.
I know they
have
different things in the menu.
Yeah, that's the main difference, is the menu item things. And also the drink sizes were smaller. Mm-hmm. I remember that. But, like, you can get a quarter pounder. You can get these weird, like, chicken discs when I was there. They weren't nuggets. They were, like, these weird, like, patties. But imagine, like, a chicken nugget, but bigger and, like, a patty
rounder,
of it. It was weird. And they'll do the weird things like the black burger and stuff where the bun's all black. And, yeah, so some changes. But overall, like, it was close enough to give me that fix of, like, okay, I got to refill my dumbass American food meter before I go back to all this exotic cuisine and stuff. I would like to talk about, on top of the food looking amazing, the t-shirt situation.
Oh, yeah.
Just fantastic
stellar
on the show.
Stellar.
Some highlights here. So Uchi has one that just has a tombstone on it, and it says, R.I.P. the competition.
That's right, yeah.
That's a good shirt. At one point, Yuriko has one that just says, local produce.
Yep.
That's a good one. Just white shirt, black impact font that says local produce. And then, oh, man. So I already like Minori's shirt. Oh, no, I'm going to get to that one.
Minori has some great shirts.
Yes. Minori has these two I'm about to talk about. One of them is on the front. I already liked it. It was just two big cartoon sleepy eyes with, like, rainbow-colored font block letters underneath it that said, so tired.
Uh-huh.
And I already liked it. And then she stood up and walked away, and you see her back. And it is just gigantic rainbow block font of Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
She's so tired all the time.
Very tired. She did seem to be the sleepiest of the house.
She had some slumber-like qualities to her. And then go ahead with the baseball shirt.
Perhaps... I mean, definitely the best shirt I have seen in a long time, and certainly a Hall of Famer that I've ever seen. It is just a shirt. Keep in mind, the show is made in 2016 or so, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It could even be more recent than that. She has – this is Minori again – has a shirt with Bart Simpson wearing Michael Jordan's jersey and number, slam dunking in front of a giant Nike logo, and there's a speech bubble, and he's saying, can't touch this.
Right. But didn't it look like a kind of decrepit version of Bart Simpson, like a weird zombie version of Bart Simpson?
I mean, I think they tried to stretch out his limbs and everything so it would be more proportionate with Michael Jordan. But they are breaking, like, I think, like, the four biggest copyrights of the early 90s between The Simpsons, Michael Jordan, Nike, and MC Hammer.
Yeah,
it is just this beautiful, beautiful cornucopia of early 90s. Like, I would love that shirt. It's so good.
Shirt.
So, yeah, I think we really, really loved this. And you had the idea of ranking the six house members.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're talking about an order of, like, who we'd just, like, want to hang out with, like, have a conversation with, have a beer, that type of thing, right?
Yeah.
All right, so should we start at the bottom?
The bottom being number six.
Yeah, and then we'll work our way up to the person.
All right, how about you give your ranking, I'll give my ranking.
Okay, here's mine. From six to one.
And please feel free to give a little bit of an explanation as to why.
Oh, yes, yes, I will. So in last place for me, and keep in mind, I want to preface this with, I thought all six of them seemed delightful.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to sit down and have a conversation with any of these six housemates.
Well, I slightly disagree with that, but
okay.
Go ahead.
We'll get to that. My last place is Minori. Minori, I thought, very nice, it seemed. seemed a little standoffish in conversation at times, you know, would just kind of like pull the ripcord on certain conversations and be like, I don't want to talk. Like, she didn't give a lot to a conversation, you know. She seemed very, very nice and everything, mm-hmm. but like, I feel like it would be hard to keep a conversation going with her.
Also, because you don't speak Japanese.
That would be an issue mm-hmm. as well. So mm-hmm. I would bring the translator to any of these six beer meetups or whatever we're doing. Fifth place, we've got Mizuki. So she was the office worker mm-hmm. and the barista. I just figured, like, she seemed super nice, too, but, like, all the things that she, like, knows the most about and the things she works in, it's, like, coffee and soccer business. Sure. Like, I don't know anything about any of that stuff, sure. so I feel like that would – like, she seemed very nice, mm-hmm. and I think that's why I put her above Minori is because, like, I think it'd be at least a more positive conversation, okay. but I don't know what we would talk about. Fourth place would be Uchi, Tatsuya. On top of, like, you know, I don't feel like I'd have too much to talk to him about. He seemed to have kind of an attitude – and also, I didn't like he mentioned the thing, like, oh, if I drink, I'm going to get angry. Like, I have met a lot of people like that, and it has always confused me. Like, I just kind of see that as a weird, like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I've always seen the way people act when they're drunk as somewhat of an extension of what the personality is like.
I just talk, when I get drunk, I talk so much.
Yes, but you're very, very happy and bubbly and everything.
And yeah, it's sometimes like when I'm drunk, I am extremely interested in everything everyone has to say. So I just yes. want to talk to everyone.
Your eyes light up constantly when you're drunk. You're just like, I want to talk about this. Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of how I feel. And so, like, if he's the type of guy that gets angry when he's drunk, I could see him as just kind of being angry.
Based on what you're saying, I feel like he should be a little higher in the – or, I guess, lower in the rankings. I mean, you know.
I think there's also just that thing of, like, I don't know, dudes can probably talk to dudes easier, you know, when you're meeting them. And so that's probably why he got bumped up a little bit here.
Okay.
But, yeah, like, didn't actively dislike mm-hmm. him, but he's definitely the least of the dudes for me.
Mm-hmm.
And third place is Yuki. So at times I had him at number one here while I was having kind of my rankings going, because he just seemed like a smart, funny, kind of mm-hmm. happy guy and everything.
Well, I think I know what you're going to say, and let's – because I have a lot to say about that. So
okay, yeah, so we'll get to that, because that is – assuming we're talking about the same thing, that is when I bumped him down to three. Number two is Yuriko. She – just a delightful human being.
She's a delightful girl. I mean, as of this point in the show, she seems like she's a delight.
Yeah, very just happy, very smart, just very human. She just seems like the type of person that you'd want to talk to about anything and you'd leave smiling, mm-hmm. it seems.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, nothing bad to say about her. And number one, Makoto. He just seemed like just a super solid, down-to-earth. Like, not this loud, wacky personality, not the life of the party or mm-hmm. anything, but like seems like the type of friend where it's like, you know, if you were going through some shit or whatever, he'd be the guy to get a beer with and just kind of really have a great conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, how about you?
Okay, so last place for me. And I just want to say, I think that all these people seem great.
Yes.
Except my biggest problem was with Yuki. So he's number six. And for most of the show, he would have been hovering like at least in third place, I feel like. But he dropped down in that last episode we saw because he's the oldest in the group. Obviously, that's not why I don't like him. But I think because he's the oldest, he is a little patronizing to everyone else.
Yeah.
And the rest of the house put together this awesome little birthday celebration for him with balloons. He had like a shawl thing. What are those things called?
A sash.
He had a sash, you know, all sorts of yummy foods. They gave him gifts and stuff. They clearly went out of their way for it. I thought it was incredibly sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of just trying to, you know, have a good time, the conversation turns really dark. And this is something that he brings up all the time, I feel like. And multiple times during the show, the short amount of the show that we've watched, he's brought up like, oh, what are your future goals? What do you want to do in life? And he, you know, if you didn't watch the show, he has been tap dancing since he was 7 years old.
Right.
He went overseas to tap dance. His whole life is about tap dancing, and that's what he does professionally. So not everyone – I think it's actually really rare that someone can say, like, I'm doing professionally what I've been doing since I was 7 years old.
Right.
So he's in a very advantaged position. I mean, I'm not discounting the fact that he probably has worked incredibly hard. I mean, he definitely has worked incredibly hard to get there, and I'm sure he's an amazing tap dancer. I'm not someone to judge that because I don't know what constitutes good tap dancing.
Right.
But he is looking at life through that perspective, and the idea of being in your early 20s and being unsure of what your future is going to look like, which is extremely common. Like,
right.
Most people, in their 20s, don't know what they're going to do for themselves. He doesn't have that. So he just, you could tell he's just judging everyone for not having a clear-cut vision of what their future is going to be. And he's just forcing his views on everyone else. And I get that Japanese society is different and, you know, they seem to really value, like, you know, you have to have a good career or whatever.
A path.
And granted, maybe I'm just basing that off of the shows I've seen. But, he starts going around the table asking everyone what they want to do in the future, and they get to Mizuki. And Mizuki, I think Mizuki has her shit together. She's an office worker. She's a barista. What I've read about her separate from the show is that, like, she's won competitions doing latte art. So she's not just like some, she's 20, she's 22 years old.
Yeah, she's extremely young.
And she starts talking about how she wants to have like a cafe of her own somewhere, mm-hmm. someplace where she can, you know, all her friends can gather. She loves making coffee. She loves interior design so she could decorate. It was like a very nice, like, idea of what she wants in the future. And in my opinion, it was pretty clear cut. I mean, not everyone can say like, oh, this is what I want to do. And also she's so young. So it's not like you have to have like, all right, this is what I want to do. And these are the steps I'm going to take to do it. Like, and I think she's in a great place. I mean, she seems to have her shit together, but he takes that and sort of twists it to be like, well, that's not good enough. I'm dozing off here.
What's the path?
Go on. And he was like, oh, I'm like nodding off or something like that. Like, what is your path? He doesn't like, first of all, why are you forcing this on her? Second of all, she answered your question and she answered it totally sufficiently. And thirdly, you're just making her feel like shit because she doesn't have some grand, like, definitive, I want to be a tap dancer kind of dream.
Yes.
Like, what the fuck? Like, she was crying. Yuriko was crying because I guess she felt bad for, Mizuki. It was just like, why would you ever do that? I get there's, you know, maybe there it has to do with the cultural differences, I don't know, but if I saw someone doing that, I'd be like, fuck you, dude. Not everyone is in your position to just be like, oh, I've just been a tap dancer my whole life. Can you imagine being that fortunate where you just have this one thing that you're really good at and you could just rest on that, not having to worry about anything in your life, knowing that you're always going to have a career? Like, it's just – that really fucking pissed me off. And he seemed like a nice guy up until then. He seemed really down to earth. But just – you could tell he was just being really patronizing. He probably thought he was all high and mighty because he's a tap dancer. He's older than everyone else. That really fucking pissed me off. And I really felt bad for Mizuki there. I thought that was such bullshit.
I felt terrible for her too, especially with the context of like them putting together this birthday party for him him bringing it down. And like I took a big swing on him in this scene because – early on when he was talking about that stuff, mm-hmm. I was kind of relating to him because mm-hmm. I am someone who from a young age knew what he wanted to do and mm-hmm. kind of like had that path. And like, you know, there were some similarities there for sure. And I do believe in the importance of like knowing what you want to do and then throwing everything at it. But, you know, there were probably times maybe when I was a little younger than Yuki mm-hmm. where I don't think I would have said these things as harshly as he did, and mm-hmm. certainly not in the context of like a birthday party like this. But I probably back in college is like, oh no, you gotta, you know, pick the thing you want to do and just 100% just, but people would get upset about that because it's like, you can't just, it's not that easy. It's not just like, okay, well, I'll throw a dart at that. Oh, I guess I'm going to be a doctor. Like, no, it's, that's in college in that age, the mm-hmm. age all these people in this house are, it's kind of the age where you are trying to figure out what you're doing. Like even Makoto, who's this confident, you know, smart guy, he's kind of like, well, I would love to be a baseball player, but I'm acknowledging it's hard. I might not make it. I need to have a plan B.
Yeah, and you know what, too? Like I was surprised, and maybe it's like a little bit of a sexism thing here, too. Yuki is really forcing this line of thinking on Mizuki. Meanwhile, Makoto, who is a student and aspires to be a professional baseball player, which out of everyone in the house is the most like, that is a long shot.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they said to Minori, like, oh, being a model is probably being harder than a professional baseball player. I don't think so. I mean, I'm sure being a model comes with its own set of challenges that I'm not aware of. But when I think of it, like, there are probably hundreds of thousands of models. And there's not many professional baseball players, you know what I mean? I think his dream was the most highfalutin, and yet Yuki didn't really press him on that at all. And I also just want to say, too, imagine being in your early 20s. Like, when I was in my early 20s, which wasn't that long ago, I wasn't super sure what I wanted to do. I'm not even super sure where I'm going to end up now. But if you have someone, it's I feel like what Yuki was doing was just verbalizing that demon that everyone has inside of them that's always nagging them. Like, oh, I have to figure out what I want to do now. My friends got it all figured out. This person has it all figured out. Why am I not like them? You know, you're always putting so much pressure on yourself to figure this shit out. But you always have that nagging inside you. You don't need this asshole, you know, talking to you during a birthday celebration when I'm sure she's thought about it a bunch herself. And that aside, she does have a pretty good idea of what she wants to do. She's literally following her heart. She wants to have a place where all her friends can gather, you know, a nice place that she...
Yeah.
You know, that really fucking pissed me off. It really did.
It seems like he was putting himself above everyone else. It's like, well, I did this. You know, I had this in mind from a young age. Why didn't you? And like, why don't you now? Right. Like, it's just... Yeah, it's rubbing salt into the wound of, like you said, it's probably something that they spend a lot of time thinking about and worrying about. And then you've got this guy who happened to have this thing since he was a little kid just being like, oh, you're not doing as good as me. You don't have the right attitude.
So yeah, Yuki really sucks. So number five, I would put Makoto. Nothing against Makoto. He seemed like a fine guy. I just feel like he seemed a little passive. He didn't really have much of a personality there. And I feel like if I were talking with him, I wouldn't really have much to work with. He seemed kind of quiet. And
he seems like the guy you would come to with an issue and hear him out. And
yeah,
see if
he seems like a great component of a larger friend group.
I could totally see that. But he's not the guy that, like, it's not just you and Makoto going out and getting a beer. Yeah. Like, yeah, okay, I see what you're saying there.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Number four, Minori. She seemed like a really nice girl. There's nothing too controversial about her. She's obviously a very attractive girl. They make comments about her well-developed body often, which I guess is true. She's very attractive.
The panel talks about her a lot, and like the bikini and all that stuff. So the blue bikini of lore.
Yeah, she's obviously an attractive woman. She's a model. She seems really nice, but I don't know. I feel like I couldn't really relate to her in any way, really. Number three, I have Uchi. Uchi seems to be like a really chill guy. He seems to know what he wants to do. I mean, both his parents were hairstylists, so he's a hairstylist, so he's probably, you know, happy with his lot in life right now. And he just seems really chill and self-confident. He seems like the kind of guy you could just, you know, hang out with. And he seems to be, I don't want to say the most edgy. But definitely
he has an earring.
He does have an earring. He's definitely the most unique of the group, I think. And I feel like we would be able to take him to a metal show and he'd be okay.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And then, oh, sorry, go ahead.
There was one scene that I really appreciated with him. And it's like you kind of got the sense that he was into Minori as well. Mm-hmm. But in that last episode we watched, the third episode, he's talking to her, just those two on the couch after Makoto goes to bed. And it was just kind of this thing of like, you know, it was clear that he probably had a thing for her, but he also kind of asked about the running date she went on with Makoto, and he could kind of tell that there was probably some sparks there. And it seemed like he was just kind of like okay with it. It was just like, okay, cool. And like didn't try to do some drama thing. Was like, no, you should be with me instead. It seemed like he just kind of accepted it and was like, all right.
Yeah, and he kind of made his intentions clear at the very first episode that he wanted to find a girlfriend at the house.
Right.
Which is funny and weird, and, you know, I guess you can appreciate how direct he is.
Without being like a creep about it, I like.
Right.
It.
Yeah. Number two for me is Yuriko. She just seems incredibly sweet. She seems really smart. Obviously, she's a med student. She's very soft spoken. You know, she hasn't really inserted herself into any of the very minor conflicts in the house, except for during the issue at the birthday party. And
with Yuki, yeah, because she talked with Yuki afterwards.
With Yuki, yeah, but you could just tell how empathetic she was, because she was crying when she saw Mizuki was having a rough time. And, you know, just for someone to really feel other people's pain to that extent is, you know, I just think she seems like a really sweet girl.
Definitely.
And really nice. Number one for me is Mizuki.
Really?
Yeah, she seemed really down to earth and really kind of funny and cool. She just seemed really cool.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised that my number one slot isn't a guy, but because for me personally, like, I'm always so intimidated by other girls, and I find it hard to, you know, be at ease with them, and I'm much more comfortable around guys. I guess it's just because I grew up with two older brothers.
Right.
But she just seemed very, very chill, and also she won a lot of points after what happened, because I just felt so bad for her, because I really think that her dream is a dream, and it is worth fighting for. And, you know, it just really bothered me that her feelings were discounted.
Yeah, and to be told that basically your dream's not good enough, it is kind of like, man, shut up.
Yeah, so Mizuki takes number one for me right now. And so I think you and I talked about watching more Terrace House just ourselves casually, and then we'll revisit it in a future episode of Panning the Stream. And then I'd be curious to see how our rankings change by the end of the season.
Yes, and like, you know, these first three episodes are relatively drama-free and stuff, but, you know, who knows? Like, maybe there are more situations like Yuki at the table that people start getting more pissed at him. You know, we'll see when people come and go, because it sounds like the show is a bit loose. Like, you know, you just leave when you want to, which I guess technically you could leave at any point on any reality show, but like...
Yeah, usually there's a whole process, though, like a voting off process or something.
Yeah, like people rarely just like quit the show. Right. You know, it's usually like you didn't get a fucking rose or something. So, no promises on when that's coming, but I think we're in agreement that we want to watch more.
Absolutely.
And maybe after we finish a season or something, we'll do kind of like an extra, like, hey, let's see how we feel at the end of the season or something.
Yeah, I'd be curious. So with that said, I think we should save our rankings now and then just
I'll keep these notes for sure.
Yeah.
But I really think this is one of my favorite shows we watched for this podcast. Mm-hmm. I just think it's an extremely just likable, positive show. Like I think the cast is all interesting in their own right in different ways. Mm-hmm. They're almost interesting in their lack of crazy character stuff, you know, because
that all these people here are full people, even though we're just getting a little taste of them. And it's, you know, like we said earlier, Americans wear their hearts on their sleeve. And there, we know there's more to these people and there's a lot of mystery there, you know. So I'm really curious to learn more about them and get to know them as the season goes on and as they start showing more and more of who they are. So I'm really excited about revisiting it and kind of watching it casually with you. I think especially the last few episodes of Panning the Stream we've done, I don't think I've enjoyed any of the recent shows that we've watched so much. So,
yeah. Any predictions going forward? I'll start with one that I do think Makoto and Minori, there is going to be like an official relationship going on between them. Mm-hmm. Whether that lasts throughout the season, I'm not sure. But mm-hmm. it seems like right now, with the cards on the table right now, that seems to be the most obvious relationship for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was surprised at the conversation Yuriko and Yuki had after the birthday incident. Because it seemed like even though Yuriko is really empathetic toward Mizuki, she also appreciated what Yuki was saying. And I could see them potentially getting together, maybe at least going on a date or something like that.
Yeah.
I'd be very surprised if anyone in the show like hooks up.
Right. But, like, I don't know. Yeah. Or if it is, I wonder if that's going to be a thing that's really dwelled on within the show.
Considering how the smallest things in the show is a huge deal, I feel like if anyone has sex with each other, it's going to be a big deal.
Yeah. I am happy with that scene between Yuki and Yuriko because it did help to repair a little bit of how the damage Yuki did in that last scene because he seemed very self-aware of it and he seemed to kind of reflect and look back and be like, yeah, maybe I was kind of a dick about that. And I did appreciate that. It doesn't fix the way he acted during that birthday thing, but like at least he was aware that because a lot of dicks will just double down and be like, no, man, I'm just telling him the truth.
I'll be honest. I didn't hear him say anything like, yeah, I could have done it differently. I just heard him kind of clarify a little of what he was saying, but definitely didn't walk it back at all. And honestly, if he's going to apologize to anyone, it should be Mizuki.
Oh, totally. 100%. Well, we will find out next week, because for the first time on Painting the Stream, we are coming back. I think we always thought this would be an option for shows that we were very into, and it turns out we're really into Terrace House.
Right.
This is a really good show, and we can't really leave it hanging here. I think we're just beginning.
We want to see the characters through.
Yeah.
We want to adjust our rankings if need be. We want to see where it ends up. So.
Yep. And so we are going to commit right now that part one of Boys and Girls in the City is 18 episodes long. You just listened to us talking about three of them. So for the next episode, we are going to do episodes 4 through episode 9. And that is including episode 9. So watch all of those episodes if you want to catch up. And we are going to keep going with it until these 18 episodes are done. So this will probably be the next 3 weeks of Painting the Stream content. So hope you like Terrace House because we really do. And we want to keep talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, you can join us next week if you want to hear more Terrace House conversation.
As always, we want to thank those that participate in our listener support feature. If you want to support this podcast, keep the lights on and everything, you can go to panningthestream.com and click support this podcast. You can do $1, $5, or $10 a month.
So keep the kibble flowing for old Razor.
Yep. It goes to Razor's kibble fund and his snacks, which Razor, by the way, you're going to get a treat after this. You've been very good sitting there. He understands now that if he sits quietly on the bed for an entire podcast, he gets a treat afterwards. So that's coming for you, Razor. And if you want to pass along any recommendations, and keep in mind, you know, this episode here, Terrace House, happened because of your recommendations, so we definitely do pay heed to them. If you want to email us at panningthestream@gmail.com, you can tweet at us at panthestream. If you can give us a 5-star review on iTunes, let us know what you think of the show. That would be greatly appreciated. And thanks to Tom Manda, as always, for the theme song. Bonk.
Thanks, bro.
Thanks to you. Thanks for joining me.
Yes. It was a pleasure.
And to all you listening and supporting the show, thank you so much, as always. We will be back next week on Painting the Stream.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, folks.